Okay, so let's get moving on Riff from the Headlines, week 15, unlike what the title says for now. Hopefully by the time people listen to this online, it will have changed back to 15 again magically. Sailor in iconic VJ Day Times Square kiss photo dies at 95. From the Associated Press, earlier this week. Providence, Rhode Island. The ecstatic sailor shown kissing a woman in Times Square celebrating the end of World War II has died. George Mendoza was 95. Mendoza's daughter, Sharon Malheur, told the Providence Journal, Mendoza fell and had a seizure Sunday at the assisted living facility in Middletown, Rhode Island, where he lived with his wife of 70 years. Mendoza was shown kissing Greta Zimmer Friedman, wonder what she is, a dental assistant in a nurse's uniform on August 14th, 1945, known as VJ Day, was the day Japan surrendered to the United States. This photo by Alfred Eisenstadt became one of the most famous photographs of the 20th century. I'm sure you guys know that better than I do. It was years before Mendoza and Friedman were confirmed to be the couple. Friedman died in 2016 at the age of 92. Mendoza died 2 days before his 96th birthday. And I did not include a copy of the picture.
He's Jewish?
Mendoza, I don't know. Friedman, I put down a little bit of money on it. Now, this is quite funny because just less than a year ago, we had an interesting... circumstance under which people talked about what we're going to talk about today, which is public displays of affection. Or Ray Ear Hoffman, in an article entitled Hand in Hand in the Five Towns Jewish Times, talked about that time that Trump landed in Israel and he tried to hold his wife's hand and she slapped it away. Oh, yeah. So he writes, "It is now described as the slap scene around the world, wherein Melania Trump slapped the president's hand away when her husband reached for hers as they arrived in Israel." And I guess it wasn't that long after Purim, I don't know. It happened as the couple it was that long after Purim, but still. Okay. Anyway,
wanting to be motzias?
So it happened as the couple disembarked from Air Force One in Tel Aviv and strode over to meet waiting dignitaries. One theory behind the rebuff was that the president had felt bad at rushing the first lady while she was putting on makeup on Air Force One. They were late and needed to get out on the tarmac. The president tried to make it up to her by reaching out to her hand, but she was in no mood for reconciliation. Perhaps there is another theory. Melania could have been reading up on the proper protocol for how to conduct oneself in the Holy Land. It's the land of Jewish people, and the Jewish people follow Shulchan Aruch.
I don't think so.
What?
I don't think so.
I don't think he thinks so either. But I copied a couple of things from what he wrote. There was this introduction. Then I copied a middle paragraph about the psychology behind handholding that he quotes anyways. I didn't do more psychology. Maybe I should have. And then finally, the last paragraph, wrapping it up. So why do people do it? According to a New York Times article by Margot Slade, the couples may do it because they want to flaunt the strength of their relationship, because they want to mask the weakness in their relationship, or because, as several psychologists put it, they are affectionate people who are very much in love. What is the reaction engendered in people? The New York Times article continues. They are normally private acts from which others are normally excluded, said Charles T. Hill, an associate professor of psychology at Whittier College in California, who has studied dating couples. Psychologists offer a range of explanations for other people's discomfort. In very simple terms, Dr. Hill noted that public displays of affection force people to become an unwilling audience. And that, he said, is discomforting. According to Keith E. Davis, a social psychologist at the University of South Carolina who has examined friendships and love relationships, affectionate behavior confronts some people with the unsettling reality that they are alone. Then, too, he said, some people have strict standards of propriety. Witnessing a public display of affection can be a threat to their standards, he said. They may reason that if you do it, other people will begin to do it. I'm not going to focus on, when we talk about this, the making people feel uncomfortable side of things. If you're making people feel uncomfortable, in addition to the issues that we'll discuss, which will be issues of tznius, etc., that's obviously something to take in consideration. If you're going to make someone feel awkward and uncomfortable, that's not something you should be doing. Some would say there is no way that Melania Trump was aware of this Ramah, because that's the main source in the conversation, notwithstanding that her son-in-law studied the Frish Yeshiva. The author would agree. However far-fetched this explanation of the episode may seem, the point is that we can use it as a learning experience. After all, Purim, which we just finished Shushan Purim Katan, you know, just an hour or so ago, was also a time of Matan Torah, and there is a proper place for everything. The problem is particularly acute with photo albums of weddings, and this is sort of his Musar Shmuz to people. If a wedding album is being shown to others, then certainly the photos should not include physical displays of affection between the Chasan and Kala. And that's sort of how he ends here. We're going to go through a lot of the sources that he covered, as well as others. I relied on a few central articles for this one. You're going to see the translations as they slip in. You know, there are a few treatments that really went through this quite nicely, as well as looking up, you know, obviously the original sources in Shulchan Aruch and the like.
That's interesting. I mean, physical displays of affection.
Mm-hmm.
Could be looks. It doesn't have to be. Like you can even keep not touching and mm-hmm. still have physical displays of affection.
Yes,
right.
And we'll see sort of how far this may go. We'll definitely go through that. That's a major topic in discussion. I wanted to open actually. First, I'll share one anecdote from when I was in yeshiva in our second year, and I was in a Rishurkin shir at the time. I was in his shir for both years, but when I was in his shir, we learned Perek HaBaal Yevimto. Perek HaBaal Yevimto is quite explicit in nature at many points. And it's not necessarily what you would think, you know, yeshiva bachrim, young single yeshiva bachrim should be learning.
Sorry, what is it?
It's very sexually explicit, the perek. It's a perek in Yevamos, I believe, the sixth perek of Yevamos.
Okay.
And it has all sorts of stuff they're talking about. This case of Yibum, that case of Yibum, this happened, that happened, the next happened. In fact, we'll even quote a Gemara in Yevamos that's, you know, kind of interesting. And Rabbi Shurkin, on one of the first days, came in to us and he said, "So you might ask me, how can we learn these Gemaras? They're so inappropriate." And he said, "I'll give you a couple of answers." Says, number one, some people may argue that if it's Torah, it's not inappropriate. By definition of it being Torah, it's not inappropriate. It's inappropriate if it's done with the wrong intentions, with the wrong thoughts, but if you're doing it for learning Torah, that's okay. And he says, the other one is, we got to learn this. You're right, it may not be appropriate, but how's the world going to last without people learning this part of the Torah? Torah hivilumot anitarach. We have this in a few different Gemaras, which also seem to be a little bit strange. But the halachos that apply to the bathroom, halachos that apply to the bedroom, and the such, and even halachos that apply to the public sphere, which are sometimes uncomfortable to discuss, also need to be discussed. And
you may not want to learn it at 14.
Right, that could be the case. I mean, we're not learning it. I mean, we weren't 14 when we were in second year of Beis Medrash. But
even though it's all Torah, there's probably age appropriate.
It could be. I mean, this is a longer discussion, but certainly there is what to be said. On the other hand, we try to avoid censorship of the Torah. It's a very tough balance. I mean, we have those certain parts of Tanakh which are read and not translated, not even read, according to some opinions, some small parts. You know, those which are read and translated. But it's tough. The idea of censoring Torah, you know, there was a big story that broke a few years ago with a censored Chumash that they had from certain Hasidic circles, which took out, you know, again, stories in the Torah because they felt them inappropriate for people. And so that's sort of a big challenge and a big balance, which I'm not going to go through. But I did actually find a great source to start, which is actually this week's Parsha. And again, you know, this shir is not necessarily appropriate for all ages, but you do get a good picture of what's going on here when you do some background in Chumash first. So I figured we start with the Parsha and we can move on to other places in Chumash and then finally to the halachic side of things. Very interesting. So says the Psukim of this week, Parsha, after the forming of the Egel, Aaron tells them, right, Vaikra Aaron, Vayomar, Chagla Hashem Machar. Tomorrow, big party, big festival for Hashem. Vayashkimu Macharad. And now here we are, source number two. They woke up the next day, early. Vayalu Alos. And they brought burnt offerings. Vayagishu Shlamim. And they brought peace offerings. Vayeshev Ha'am Le'echol V'shaseo. The people sat down to eat and drink. Vayakumu Litzachek. And they got up to be mitzachek, to play. Now, what does litzachek mean? So says the Hoyel Moshe, litzachek, gam mikan nir eli chizuk, from here too I see support, lemashe katavti parshat b'shalach al mecholot, for what I wrote in Parshat B'shalach, that the word mecholot, she'ein inyanam rikud bilvad, that a machol is not simply dancing, ela gam kalei hashir sheminagnim bahem bishat rikudam. Also, it is the refers to the playing of the musical instruments that are played at the time of the dancing. V'gam bilshanot sarfat ve'ashkenaz, and if you look also in French and German, spielen and jouer are also words that mean play, play a game, but also refer to musical instruments. Horatam tzchok v'nigun, they're understood to mean playing a game and playing. So you can, one hand, mean playing around, and the other hand, it can mean playing an instrument. And him and many others suggest that here it's talking about they partied. A big party, they played on their instruments, and they danced, and they sang, and they ate, and they drank, and everybody was happy. Rashi, on the other hand, does not look at this so positively. Rashi says, L'tzachek, yesh b'mashma hazek ilui arayot. It is implied in this term, also, sexual immorality. Shneemar litzachek bi, which is a citation from, which is a quote from the Chumash when it's talking about what Eshes Potiphar says about Yosef. It says he came in litzachek bi. Okay, so we see if litzachek there means, again, has some sort of sexual connotation. So to hear, vayakuma litzachek, they not only were doing idolatry from the Egel, they were also involved in Gilui Arayos. Ushvichot tamim, kima shenemar, yakumu naharim v'yisachaku, so to there. If you look at the English translation, you get the full, story there. Let the young men arise and play before me. And they caught every one his fellow by the head and thrust his sword in his fellow's side. That v'yisachaku, playing around, can also mean killing. Afkan neharag chur, here too, chur was assassinated, right, according to the Medrash, that he was killed in trying to stop them from worshipping Avodah Zarah. So Rashi is pointing out that the word letzacheik means sexual relations. And therefore now, when we move to Bereshit 26:8, which is talking about Avimelech seeing Yitzchak and Rivka, what happened? Vayehi, and it was. Ki archu lo shem hayamim, when he had been there for a very long time, vayashkif Avimelech melech plishtim be'ad hachalon, and Avimelech, the king of plishtim, looked into the window, at a window, whatever that means, vayar, and he saw, v'hine Yitzchak mitzachek eith Rivka ishto. And Yitzchak was, and the translation here says caressing, but what would Rashi tell us? He was, again, involved in relations with his wife. And that's, in fact, exactly what Rashi says there as well. Ki archu amar, okay, that Yitzchak thought, me'ata ein li lidog, I don't need to worry anymore. Me'achar shelo antzua ad achshav. They haven't molested her, raped her until now. They haven't taken her away from me. So he figured it's no big deal. Veloni's har liot nishmar, and he was not strict in guarding his actions. And what does it mean? Vayashkef Avimelech. Avimelech saw Ra'uhu mishamish mitato. He saw him having sexual relations. So we're beginning our conversation by looking at a story in the Torah where it may not be necessarily public, but Avimelech was able to see into Yitzchak's bedroom and see what was going on there. That's pretty significant. Now the question is, if this is agreed upon, is it in fact true in the pshat of the psukim that Avimelech saw Yitzchak and Rivka engaged in sexual relations, or may it have been something else? The Mizrahi, in fact, asked on Rashi, he says, how do you know that's what happened?
Sorry, is this where he concludes that it's not your sister? Is that?
Yeah.
He said yes.
Yeah. Right.
And until now he said it's his sister, and right. Now that he sees this, I said, darn hope it's not your
right.
Sister.
Yes, exactly.
Right? So the Mizrahi actually questions Rashi. He says, how do you know that's what they were doing? Now, Rashi would counter, mitzachek, as Rashi says here. Mitzachek means sexual relations. But that's definitely not what a lot of other people say, because that's a very tough thing to say, that Yitzchak would have been doing this, again, in a way that he could have been seen. You know, never mind that, you know, there's a halacha that many of the Rishonim try to tackle, that relations are supposed to be had in a darkened room. They're not supposed to be light coming in from the outside. So that's one issue they deal with. But also, it's just, you know, inappropriate. And obviously, you know, you're not expecting peeping Toms. But on the other hand, it seems like it wasn't such a big deal. It seems like Avimelech glanced in the window. And oh my gosh, what's going on? So what's Yitzchak doing? In fact, Chadal says the following. Mitzachek es Rivka ishto. And we're going to translate Mitzachek always playing. Ma'asei ga'aguim she'en adam kasher osei machoto. Says Chadal, no. Rashi, you got it wrong here. He wasn't having sexual relations with his wife. It was simply, he was doing some small, minorly intimate acts which a regular, an Adam Kasher, would not be doing with his sister. Meaning, we have two choices here. sister or wife. So, you know, for example, let's say they were cuddling together on the couch, or whatever it was that they were doing, he was caressing her, like we had the translation. Those are things that we wouldn't expect someone to be doing with their sister. So therefore, says Shadal, that's what he thought. It's not that he saw anything explicit. It's not that Yitzchak would be doing those things. And if I said Yaakov before, I apologize. Not that Yitzchak would be doing any of those things visibly. Okay, he decided to put his arm around her as they sat down. So that's what Avimelech saw, and that's when he figured it out. Ach ein leha'amin she'aya Yitzchak mishamesh mitato v'makom she'aya afshar li'oshvei bayit acher lo avrei derech li'orto v'adachalon. He says, you can't, it's unbelievable. You could not believe that Yitzchak would be doing this in a place where other people walking by could see him through the window. No way.
And is what Shadal is saying believable that Yitzchak would be doing?
It's impossible. He says.
No, I'm saying is what Shadal is saying he did. Is that more, like, I guess it's more believable than...
Yes, much more believable. Right. And that's his motivation here. But what that does is that tells us clearly it's not such a big deal, at least according to Shadal, which is not a great halachic source. It's actually questionable whether or not he was a rabbi or not. Certainly a very important Bible commentary. But, you know, there's a lot to talk about with Shadal and Halacha. But what it does show is, in this case, listen, there was something that happened, you know, that Avimelech was able to see what was going on. We'll talk about what may have happened elsewhere, but the simple understanding of the Psukim is that Avimelech looked in the window. In this case, Yitzchak wasn't worried. You know what, I'll put my arm around my wife, and if someone sees in the window, big whoop.
So that's no one else clarifies Rashi? It's apart from this person who you're not sure?
Oh, there's a big machlokas. Mizrahi, I mean, I know who he is a tremendous perush, Shadal. Right. He's not necessarily accepted as a halachist. And generally, all the mefarshim here are not halachic. They try, again, to make certain things fit with the halacha when they can. But Mizrahi leaves it as a question, and Gur Aryeh, which is the Maharal, defends Rashi vehemently. One of his defenses is litzachek. Right? Well, Rashi said litzachek. So how does Shadal deal with that? Very interesting. Militzat mitzachek et ein inyana kim litzat mitzachek be. Okay, he says there's actually two types of playing. There's mitzachek et, and both of them really mean playing with. There's mitzachek et Rivka Ishto, and there's mitzachek be whoever. And he says, what do they mean? They're very different. Ha mitzachek et re'ehu, hu mitzachek imo ushnehem mishtashim. Says when you're playing et, when you're mitzachek et someone, that means you're playing with them. The two parties are together in this. And that is something which is positive. Everybody's happy, everybody's playing together, two kids are playing around, you say one is mitzachek at the other, mitzachek at re'ehu. On the other hand, he says, look, v'ha-mitzachek bir-re'ehu, what is a mitzachek bir-re'ehu? Says, that's someone who is hu levado mitzachek. He himself is playing around, v'in chaviro mitzachek, but the other person is not sort of involved in this action as well. And that's what was going on with Eshes Potiphar and Yosef. She said, Yosef came to play with me. I didn't want to play his game. That's what happened there. And that's why, right, as Rashi quotes, right, Litzachek B, not Litzachek E.T., but Litzachek B. Anyways, that's something very interesting.
What about in our parsha, this coming Shabbos, where it just says Litzachek, it doesn't say...
He would say it can mean just general litzachek to play. He could say it means playing instruments. I'm trying to remember if he had a comment there or not. Hoyel Moshe, by the way, is his Talmud, I should note. A very close Talmud of Shadal's. So that may... I think he said it means to play instruments. I'm almost certain, in fact, when I looked him up there. Because, again, they were just playing. Whoever wants to come, let them join. But he still explains how it can mean taking advantage of someone, but also not necessarily does it always mean that, and does it always mean sexual relations. So, there are other people who defend this and say, you know what, there's no way Yitzchak would have ever let anybody see in and know what was going on. There has to be some other explanation. Chizkuni is one of them. Vayashkef Avimelech, you can read the Hebrew on this page, English on this page, Be'ad HaChalon. What does it mean, Vayashkef Avimelech, Be'ad HaChalon?
Through
the window? Okay, some people would say it means by the window, at the window. Says Chizkuni, Yesh mefarshim lo shehaya hachalon patuach. The window wasn't open. Ela shemitoch shehaya na'ul, hevin Avimelech ha-ma'aseh. Avimelech understood his window's closed. Why is his window closed? His window is always open. What happened here?
Winter.
So says what?
Now it's winter.
Now it's winter. Yesterday it wasn't winter. Today it is winter. Avimelech realized, oh, his window's closed. I know what that means.
He put two and two
together. Right, he put two and two together and he figured it out. Now, how exactly does that fit in with the wording of the pasuk is a good question. What Vayar would mean that he realized that Yitzchak was Mitzachek as Rivka Ishto. But the point is, these Mefarshim say, correct, he saw nothing. Yitzchak would never have gone into a situation where someone would be able to see what he was doing with his wife. It's completely inappropriate. Tzror Hamor, which is a bit of a later commentary, not amongst the Rishonim, I don't believe, but very interesting nevertheless, he says a different sort of approach. Says it was done using black magic. He couldn't see through the window, but he used his magical powers to see what was going on. He compares this to the mother of Sisera, who also saw Be'ad HaChalon or Be'ad HaEshnav or whatever it was there. And also, you know, we interpret that to mean with Kishuv, because there's no way she could have actually seen where he was. Anyways, and this is sort of what we have in Chumash, where we have some Mefarshim comfortable with saying Yitzchak would have been okay with involving in some sort of minor or light intimate conduct with his wife when others could potentially have seen. Other people who say, no. There's no way in the world. And you have some people who even, the assumption would be that he was even, again, involved in full sexual relations with some way that they were able to see, and he forgot to close the door. What can you say? But anyways, we're going to begin our discussion with a very interesting Gemara on Yevamos, as we said. Says the Gemara, and I'll read the English here. And again, an incident occurred involving a certain person who cohabited with his own wife under a fig tree in plain view. And they brought him to the court, and they flogged him. So we see there's a punishment for this. But says the Gemara, Lo mipnei sharaui lekach, not because this punishment was fitting for him, as it's not prohibited by the... Could you imagine this? This is filling in the lines. But this is really what the Gemara is trying to say. As it is not prohibited by the Torah for one to engage in relations with his wife wherever he chooses. But because the hour required it to discourage others from engaging in licentious behavior. Meaning, it's obviously not something the Torah allows. But there's no technical written punishment for it. So at this point in time, the sages decided, the Chazal decided, we have to, again, give a punishment here to make sure people don't do this. But here still, we're talking about what? We're talking about actual relations. What would...
To look through the windows.
What?
To punish the other person who's looking in.
Right, and we're going to get to that, how it works both ways. This is a general question, and you know, it applies in a lot of cases, but basically, on who is the onus for averos of tznius? And there seems to be, in halacha, a little bit of a shared burden. Meaning, obviously, we don't allow, let's use the classic example of men and women. Men looking at women. So, on the one hand, Shulchan Aruch prescribes certain rules that men should always avoid getting into bad situations. And there's these rules, and those rules, and these rules, and those rules, and these rules, and those rules for men. And Shulchan Aruch also has a whole list of rules for women. You have to cover this, cover that. Again, I'm not here to talk about the, you know, the way this works in the modern world, and I'm certainly not here to tell people what to do in terms of things like this. But I am here to discuss this idea of public displays of affection and how halacha views it, and this will be one of the balances that comes up, is sort of, you know, who's really to blame for looking through a window? And that's certainly a good question. Mm-hmm. So says the Gemara in Bava Basra, Rav Binah Hava Kamitzayin Ma'arta, source number 11 already, if you could believe that. I mean, most of them we haven't been long reading sources inside, but still. Rav Binah Hava Kamitzayin Ma'arta, Rav Binah was marking caves. Kimata Lema'arta Davram. And when he came to the cave of Avram Avinu and Ma'arta Machpela, Ashkechel Eliezer Eved Avraham Dekai Kamei Bava. He found Eliezer, the servant of Avraham, who was standing there by the entrance of the cave. Amarle, so Rav Binah says to Eliezer, hey Eliezer, what's up? Maika Avid Avraham, what's Avraham doing now? Amarle, Gani Bechanfa de Sarah, he is lying in the arms of Sarah, Vikame Ainale Bereshe, and she is looking at his head.
Gan Eden.
Sorry?
They are in Gan Eden.
They are in Gan Eden, and that's exactly what the Gemara says. Amarle, Zil Imale Binah Kaya Bava. So Rav Binah does, I guess, is not in the mood to leave them in their private time. So he says, he tells Eliezer, he says, hey, go stop them and tell them that I'm waiting at the door. Amar le, le'ol. So Avram said to him, you can come in. Why can you come in? What do you mean? They're acting inappropriately. He's lying on his wife's lap and she's going through his hair. Meida yediya deyetzer behai al-malaka. As you say, they're in Gan Eden. Says Avram, everybody knows that there is no yetzer hara in this world. In Gan Eden, in the Olam HaEmes, in the Olam Haba, there's nothing to do with sexuality. So this is totally fine. It won't lead to any inappropriate thoughts. So Ayan Vinafak, so he went in, he looked at the cave, he came out, he marked it down on his cave map or whatever he was doing, or he put a thing above ground. And Shalom al Yisrael. So at this point, seems like a nice, agadic story. Rav Banah goes into the cave.
It's incredible how unfazed he seems to be from this circumstance.
Yeah, I mean, it's there. But this Gemara, you know, it just looks like a regular agada, a nice story. Okay, we learned so many lessons from this, lessons like that, lessons like this, lessons like that. And says to Nemuke Yosef here, something very strange. Shaminan me hagada zu, we hear from this story, Derech Eretz. Right? What's the appropriate way to act? Said, we see it's inappropriate for a person to act with his wife in such ways in the presence of others. Meaning, that's a lesson that we can take from this story. You know, you could have come up with all sorts of other lessons, but he says, you see, that husband and wife should not be acting in this way with each other in front of other people. But what's strange is that unlike a lot of midrashim where we learn a certain lesson, this actually gets codified as pure halacha. And here I'm going to point out a mistake in the translation. I left on the translation. This is from a Yeshiva, Rabbi Dov Linzer. Rabbi Linzer is well known. He's one of the Rosh Yeshiva, or the head of one of the departments at Yeshiva Chovei Torah, the very controversial yeshiva. Anyway, so he gave a shiur on this that was online, so I used his translations for some of them. However, here he made a little bit of a mistake. So Yesh Omrim says the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, on Shulchan Aruch, in what's known as the Mapa, Nevin Ezra 21:5, source number 13. Yesh Omrim, there's those who say, De'ein lin hoga filu im hishto bidvarim shel chiba. You should not act even with your wife. Meaning, certainly you can't be acting this way with other women. That's what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about at that point. But even with your wife, you shouldn't act bidvarim shel chiba in ways of affection. Kigon, for example, I'm trying to think if I switched the word affection here. I may have made some slight edits. But kigon, for example, such as le'ayin bereshe, to look at his hair, im yesh lo kinim, if he has lice, bifnei acherim, in front of others. Wow. Now, what's the difference between his hair and her hair? A big halachic difference. Right? Women's hair is not supposed to be revealed in front of other people, potentially. Right? So that would be a really big deal. So if, you know, the Ramah's talking about inspecting your wife's hair, that's obviously a really big deal. If the Ramah's, however, talking about which he is, as he says by the words bereshe and im yesh lo kinim, a wife inspecting her husband's hair for lice, that's something that's a lot less, you know, of an affectionate act. A lot less of an intimate act. And you're still not supposed to do that, says Shulchan Aruch. However, he does quote this as, there are those who say that it's not appropriate to do. So he doesn't codify this as absolutely strict halacha, but we consider it pretty strict halacha. I mean, this is the Ramah saying this. This is not, again, some nobody saying this on a halacha that we don't rely on.
So this would be like even for medical purposes to inspect them there for lice.
So we're going to talk about how far this would, you know, this would go. The first thing I want to point out to you is the Drisha, just the next source, and we'll work from there. V'nir la aniutat, he says the Drisha. It seems to me, didavka lishkav b'cheka ki ahu ma'asehu de'asur. Okay, what did the Nemukiya, let's take a look. What did the Gemara say? The Gemara said, she's lying in her lap, and she's inspecting his hair. The Nemukiya Yosef says, you shouldn't do things like this. So what could things like this mean? So most people would look at the Gemara and say, lying in your spouse's lap. Mm-hmm. That would seem to be, again, an act of intimacy of sorts. Says the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, no! It's kigon la'ayin bereshe, and he even adds in the words, im yesh lo kinim. Says it's the looking at the head alone that's not allowed. Says the Drisha, I can't handle that. V'nir la'niyutati didavka lishkav v'cheka k'ahu ma'asehu de'asur. Says only the lying in her lap, like in that story, that would be prohibited. If the guy's sitting down on a chair to look in his hair, it's possible that no one disagrees that this would be permitted. Which is very strange because he's aware of the Ramah. The Ramah disagrees, right? But he says he can't see how that can, you know, can come out from this. V'ayin b'tshuvat Rashba, but he does try to find a source. He says, look in the tshuvat of the Rashba, Siman Aleph Kuf Peches in 1188. Dimash Ramina, that it seems from there, digam la'ayin b'reshe l'chud ha'vimidvarim havim vi'im lidei chiba, that even just, and we're still on this page, we're still on page 14, no need to rush yet, that it sounds from there that even just looking at his head alone is considered as divarim ha'mevi'im lidei chiba, things that lead to affection. So this is not actually, if you look in the Ramah says dvarim shel chiba. Here he changes it a little bit. It says dvarim ha'mevi'im lidei chiba shemedame oto lid zikal ha'yadayim v'atzat ha'mitayin cham. The Rashba is talking about when a woman is in nida, how you're not supposed to do certain things, and he says this may fall under the category of some of the things that are prohibited. Even looking in her husband's hair at that time may be something that should be avoided. Now, he's not talking about when she's not in nida, which is what the Ramah is talking about. But he says, you know, it's possible that maybe the Ramah got the idea from this Rashba that this has, again, somewhat of a personal, affectionate nature. Perhaps that's where he got it from, but he says he doesn't think there's anybody that would disagree with him to say that the only issue is lying down in the lap and not inspecting hair. Here's the thing, though. The Ramah does say that. And not only does the Ramah say it, but the Ramah changes it. He even adds in to look for lice. So there are two ways to look at it. One way to look at it would be to take the Ramah and say, listen, when the Ramah says, you know, looking through his hair to check for lice, it doesn't mean you've got the evil lice comb and you're pulling out all his hairs as you sweep through them and you're doing this for medical benefit. What he probably means is not to, you know, sit down with your husband there and caress his head and as if you're looking for lice, you could fetch it in that direction.
Right.
And perhaps that's where maybe the Drisha may want to go. Perhaps that's how he would explain the Ramah and say, it's impossible for me to actually understand that. On the other hand, we have the Taz. And the Taz is out in full force to defend this Ramah. And he says the following, I'm going to read the English version of it. And it is hard to understand. Why did they need to even mention that she was looking at his head? He's responding to these questions that he asked on the Ramah. He asked the same questions as the Drisha, as we saw in the previous note, and we're on the back page now in the Taz in source 15. So he asked those same questions. Really, you're telling me this is prohibited? So he says, one second, why did the Gemara even need to mention that she was looking at his head? So you could say that it was just to tell the story, but he says, no, there's a purpose. What must the purpose be? The purpose must be, he says, and it seems to me that there were two reasons why he did not want to enter there, why Ravina did not want to enter. One was because of Avram himself, that a person should not do actions of affection with his wife in front of others because of tzniut. Just like in that story where a person cohabitated with his wife under the fig tree and they flogged him. And so to hear it is similar to sexual relations. This would be the lying in the lap, as he's going to say. Secondly, that one should not arouse the desires of others through this, that this will bring them to thoughts and remind them of sexual relations through the action that is being performed. What he means is as follows. Now he explains what he means. Therefore, Bana said that from the side of Avram himself he acted inappropriately, chas v'shalom, that he laid in his wife's lap. Secondly, even looking at his head alone is inappropriate in order that it should not bring others to inappropriate thoughts. What he means by this is he's saying there's two types of inappropriate actions here that are a lack of tznut. The first type of inappropriate action is something that is inherently sexual, inherently private, and that would be something like laying in a lap. But looking at a head, despite the fact that it in itself is not necessarily a sexual act, when people see a couple gazing longingly into each other's eyes or staring at each other, it makes them think, oh, this couple, they must be, you know, and that will lead to inappropriate thoughts. The fact that it's a couple doing it in this way, it's not that there's anything wrong in that action. So he differentiates. There's one type of action which is inappropriate, tznias-wise, and there's something else which makes an onlooker think of the love that's between them and therefore is inappropriate. And that's why he says the Gemara needs to mention that she was looking at his head. So to this,
I was wondering in the first source when they talked about photos of the chasen and kala, yes, displaying affection. What does that mean?
So he would be following this Taz, and he in fact quotes the Taz in that article, but he says, to this Avram responded that even the laying in her lap is not prohibited because there's no need for tenuit in that world. As it is known, there are no sexual relations in that world. As a result, there's no prohibition for him and certainly for others, and if so, it's proven from here that even just looking at his head is prohibited in front of others, meaning because it's going on. But, as he said, look, and it seems that there is a difference in this, that looking at one's head is not an... is not due to others. Yeah, this was an awkward phrase in the Hebrew that I didn't really know how to translate well. And is prohibited specifically with one's wife. As an onlooker is reminded of their intimacy through sexual relations and can come to inappropriate thoughts through this. Again, this itself is not...
because it was a husband and wife.
But it's dafka because it's a husband and wife. However, which is not the case with the daughter, sister, and granddaughter, that there is no reminder of sexual relations and would be permitted in front of others.
Or even complete strangers.
However, perhaps...
right,
he doesn't want to say that, but that's the rest of the Siman and Shulchan Aruch. However, laying in her lap is obviously prohibited by all. And this is sort of his differentiation, that there are some actions which are inherently intimate, and those are not sneas, and therefore those are prohibited. But there are also those that are just done between husband and wife, and that makes people think about what else is going on with them and their relationship. And that's also prohibited according to the Taz. According to the Drisha and many others, we see no. It's just things that are inherently of a sexual nature. If they're of a sexual nature and people may think, have inappropriate thoughts, that's the problem. Otherwise, not. Now, here's a very strange tshuva from the Bnei Banim, which is Rav Henkin Jr., I would say, or Yehuda Herzl Henkin. He writes something, honestly, quite hard to understand, both in reality and in halacha. However, for a husband to hold his wife's hands while they walk on the street, it seems that even for a Torah scholar, there is no concern if it is not in the situation of creating offense as necessary. And here's the statement. As it is obvious that there is no sexual affection, and that's a rough translation. I didn't know, again, how to exactly translate chibat ishut. That's probably the best translation. Since everyone does this, that should say, at times, women with women and men with men, and so too in the Talmud. And he quotes a story in the Gemara where two men are supposed to hold hands if they're walking in a certain circumstance. This is very hard to square with reality.
Yeah.
This is exactly the type of thing that I would think falls in the Taz's second category, if not the first. Meaning there would be those who would argue that it falls in the first, and holding hands is something intimate that husband and wife do as an expression of love for each other, and who knows where that's going to go. Even if it's not that, though, it could be very strongly argued that it's just something that when they do it with each other, it has that special extra reminder. And he says there's absolutely no problem. He says not even for a Torah scholar who's supposed to be, you know, above other people. And he also deals with the question of, people say, well, you know, if this is something that husband and wife are doing, then people will know when the wife is Anita and when the wife is not Anita. And as many other poskim say, that's not a concern at all. Rav Moshe is, you know, famous for saying this. He says the Gemara had different clothing for her in the times of the Gemara. But he says, and to hold the wife of his hand who is not Anita, what sort of thoughts of sexual relations could this have? And if we come to prohibit this, we should also prohibit passing a child from husband to his wife, or serving food from her aunt to his in front of others, all of which are prohibited when she is Anita, but not prohibited otherwise. So he says, you know, this is too low on the bar, and this would be permitted, which, again, that's his opinion. The Aruch HaShulchan rewards this, and I'm going to let you go for Rabbi Spitz's cheer in this moment now. He actually rewards the Ramah. It's very interesting. He makes two changes to the way the Ramah says it. He says, number one, Yesh Amrim Dafilu Im Yishto Ein Rahui Lehitnaig Bivarim Shel Chiba Yetera. It's not appropriate to show extra affection. Chiba Yetera. That's different than the Ramah said, just something that shows affection. And number two, Bifnei Abriot, Kimo Le'ayin Birosho. For example, to look at his head, the Kayotze Bazeh, but he takes out the Kinim part, he takes out the lice part, and he maybe felt that was misleading. And he says, however, a good statement to end the Shir with, V'en Lecha Yafeh Minat Tzniut, there's nothing more beautiful than Tzniut. Have a nice night, and please ask your rabbi if you're planning on implementing anything from this Shir.
He says extra. Does he mean extra compared to other people, or extra...
So that's up there. What does Kibaya Tira mean, and how would it be applied? There was someone who I spoke with who was willing to say, based on this, that they said they're assuming the Aruch HaShulchan would certainly permit holding hands, but maybe something like kissing in public might be different.
Chiba is, everybody can decide what is a chiba for him.
I mean, the problem is you also have to realize what's chiba for other people, right? Because we're saying there is a certain onus on the couple to make sure that other people are not aroused by it. So if you have someone who's come from a place where they've never seen a man and a woman hold hands, that might be something very shocking to them and maybe something that's inappropriate in that place. On the other hand, you know, this can also lead to a slippery slope. So where does this end then? You know, what is, if we're really comparing it to society, that's another big question. But again, I can't really go further at this point in time due to the next year. So please head off there if you're interested, and I'd be happy to discuss further over email or another time.